I researched that 85% of the clothes that we donate end up in landfills or being incinerated. 85% is huge. I also learned that according to the British Fashion Council, that there is enough clothing on the planet to dress the next 6 generations. That's about 150 to 180 years of dressing every single human on the planet with what already exists. So that was kind of my moment where I was like, we need to fix this problem.
Every great company starts the same way, with a dream. Not a pitch deck, not a spreadsheet, but a vision. And behind every entrepreneur is the same starting point, a belief that something better is possible and the willingness to take on the risk trying to build it. Welcome to Dreaming Big. I'm Alexis Allen, and I'm a relationship manager on the Texera Lockroom Group here in the New York City office at UBS. I've spent the last decade working alongside founders across industries and stages. From ideas scribbled on napkins to companies scaling faster than anyone expected, I have seen what it really takes to turn vision into reality. And what has always drawn me is not just the outcome. It is the optimism, the grit, and the ability to hold a vision long before anyone else believes in it. On Dreaming Big, I sit down with entrepreneurs to talk about where that dream started, the moments that shaped them, the pivots they did not plan, what they're building, who they're becoming, and the lives they're trying to live along the way. And so we go deep into identity, turning points, joy, and the season where that dream felt fragile but somehow survived. This isn't just a podcast about startups. It's about making something out of nothing, about protecting an idea long enough for it to become real, and about the courage to keep going day after day. And so whether you're building your first company, scaling your fifth, investing in a founder, or simply drawn to people who see the future before it exists, this is for you. If you'd like to connect or share your story, you can reach me at alexis.allen@ubs.com. Now, this is Dreaming Big. And so let's dive in. Rebecca Bahmani spent 30 years in the fashion industry, designer showrooms and lace manufacturing, selling to the biggest names in fashion. And then she learned what she had been contributing to, which is 11 million tons of textile waste in landfills every year, which is almost 85% of all textiles we produce. And so when she was pregnant with her second child and she realized that she couldn't transition her daughter's clothes to her son the way that she'd wanted to, that's when the research started, and that's when she started to learn the truth about children's wear's environmental impact. And so most people would just feel guilty and move on, but Rebecca decided to spend the rest of her career making amends. Pre-Love You isn't just another resale platform. It's a credit-based circular fashion system designed to teach kids, not just their parents, that clothes have value. And so you send in your kids' clothes, they're graded, you get credits, and then you can shop online with those credits. What's amazing about Rebecca's story is that for many years, she was bootstrapped and took in hundreds of donations to fill her initial inventory. She turned her own barn into a photo studio. She joined Dream Ventures Accelerator. And now she's featured in various publications like Fast Company as a model for circular kids fashion. Her story is one of perseverance, pivots, and true innovation. And I hope that you enjoy it as much as I did. Now, this is Dreaming Big. So let's dive in. Rebecca, first of all, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'm really looking forward to digging into your backstory and everything you built at Pre-Love You. So first, let's start with the fact that you've had such a long and impressive career in fashion. And now, while you're still building in the fashion industry, you're really trying to combat one of the pieces of the industry that many of us know about but struggle to solve, which is how environmentally destructive overconsumption and mass production is. I want you to share more about what led you to understanding this problem, and then what led you to diving in to fix it.
Sure. I'm a 30-year fashion veteran. I've seen, sales, production. I've been on the sales side where I was pushing for deliveries for stores to get every month to, generate more revenue. And then I've been on the design side, the production side, where I've seen how much people are producing. I've seen the content of the fabrics they're using, how they break down, how people are using them. So I've seen a broad sense of what the industry is doing that most people don't connect with. And it wasn't until I found that I was pregnant with my second child. My oldest is now 7. I have a girl. My youngest is 5. It's a boy. And I remember sitting in front of bins of clothing when I was pregnant, and I found out I was pregnant with my son, and thinking, what am I doing with all of her stuff? And I'm not somebody who necessarily just jumps in and accepts what other people tell me. Knowing how broken the system was in the production side, I wanted to find out for myself what happens to the clothing that I can't reuse for my son. And I dove in and I researched that 85% of the clothes that we donate end up in landfills or being incinerated. 85% is huge. And that's according to the EPA and the National Institute of Standards and Technology. I also learned that according to the British Fashion Council, that there is enough clothing on the planet to dress the next 6 generations. That's about 150 to 180 years of dressing every single human on the planet with what already exists. So that was kind of my moment where I was like, we need to fix this problem.
Like many people, they see problems out there. And for you, you don't accept necessarily the natural standard. And so what led you to saying, okay, it's me who's going to solve this problem? And what was the first step that you took to start with this creation?
The first step I took was really the ideation of it. It was going through my kids' clothes every 3 months. Children outgrow 7 sizes in the first 2 years of life alone. So it's that constant cycle of being a parent and not having time to do anything. But now you have to shift your mindset to going through drawers and what's working, what fits, what doesn't. Then where do I put it? How do I get rid of it? You have piles all over your house. You have bags and closets. So that was really the pivotal moment of really just living motherhood the way every other parent lives parenthood.
It makes a lot of sense. And I appreciate the fact that you decided, okay, this is obviously a problem. And then now I want to solve it. And so tell our audience what Pre-Love You actually is and maybe what it looked like in the very early days.
Sure. The best way to explain it is Pre-Love You gives parents a radically simpler and smarter way to manage the constant cycle of children's outgrowing their clothes. At the same time, you know, childhood is like one of the highest churn consumption cycles in modern life. Yet, like, families are still managing it with tools that weren't designed, like donation piles, resale apps, storage systems. And it's all emotional too for a parent, if you think about it. I mean, our kids grow. And it's emotional. So when I started it, I knew it needed to be an easy system. I knew it needed to be something really easy for a parent that they didn't have to think about. When I started it, we weren't giving credits up front. So people would have to wait to send things. Initially, we weren't covering shipping in for any tiers. And we only had 1 tier initially, and then quickly had to pivot by listening to parents and saying, well, you know, shipping in is like a lot. I don't want to stand online at the post office. So we've made everything easier. And in addition, we're also taking things with holes and stains so they don't have to sort any of that. Just put it in a bag and get it to us and we'll take care of it.
You make it really easy for parents at any stage. So whether they, you know, they're worn and they're no longer usable, or they're beautiful items that their children have outgrown, I think that is a real differentiator. And when, you know, the average consumer thinks about this space, they think a lot about, you know, The RealReal and ThredUp and bigger companies who have really tackled this space in not a membership model. So share a little bit more about why you chose to go down, you know, a membership model path versus one-for-one consignment.
The choice was easy. Other platforms, resale, consignment, rental, with kids, you're dealing with a different animal. If you rent clothes, your kids get attached to it. They don't want to send it back. We also, as parents, don't have time to photograph things, send it in. When you finally sell something, go back and forth to the post office. I created a membership that you're in a community. I want to build a community of every like-minded parent. Once you're in the community, the clothing that you send in, we will grade each piece and give them credit. So the membership is to really like come into the community and be part of it, and then use what you have as that dynamic form of currency. You know, you can swap clothing. One of the other things is that by setting it up in this model, it allows children to be part of the system. Oftentimes we're taking clothes and we're shoving it in a garbage bag and we don't know where it goes. What we do is we have hang tags that are like old digital library book cards, but we are going to digitize that soon. So if a parent wants to go and they see the product that was theirs on there, they can look and they could see there have been like two other children that have had it since my daughter. And then there's giving kids agency to allow them to shop on their own. Right now, parents don't take their kids to school, to stores anymore. They don't try things on. We either order them online, we have them try it on at home. There's no transaction. They don't realize there's value. So this operation also teaches them value. They might come back and say, oh, mama, this sweater, it doesn't fit me anymore. How many credits do you think I can get for this? I saw this really great jacket on Pre-Love You and I really want it. Do you think I can get 20 credits? Because the jacket is 20 credits. And they realize that there's value, there's transaction.
It's such an innovative model, both from the fact that it is based around this timeliness in terms of children grow out of clothes so quickly. And so having sort of some sort of membership is a better model, and it's different than what's already out there. So that element I really admire. In addition, I love the fact that you have used this website that really is also designed for children. So the kids can browse, they can favorite their own items, they can see how many credits things cost. And it's such an intentional element to how you've designed it, because it prompts a conversation around what is something valued? What is valuable? And in our world, we talk a lot about how you have conversations around money and value and the importance of, you know, spending and budgeting. And it's teaching those concepts in, you know, a more tangible way than just necessarily transaction and money. And so it's really, really smart. And I absolutely love it.
Thank you.
I would also like to hear more about, you have this really smart grading process. So first, can you share a bit more about that, where, you know, a parent sends in clothes, you evaluate quality and brand, and maybe, you know, a certain bomber jacket is 21 credits versus sneakers or maybe 30 credits. How do you determine the value, and how did you go around establishing that kind of grading process?
You have to look at the whole picture, right? My years of experience in the fashion industry, I know brands. So our credit system is based on the designer. Carter's is not going to get as much as Stella McCartney, for example, right? So we have to reward, obviously, artisanship and craftsmanship and designers, and we recognize that. Then there's a type of clothing, right? There's a onesie or a snowsuit, which is going to have more value. Then there's the largest thing to consider is the condition, right? Is it as is? Is it have stains? Is it new with tags? So all of that is taken into consideration. And then we throw in other things like sustainable. If you are sending in a sustainable garment, we're going to throw in a couple more credits, because I don't pretend that parents don't still shop new, but at least we can encourage parents and families to shop more sustainably minded and make better decisions. And then laundry, we'll kick in a couple more credits for you. We don't want to be a dry clean company. If you send it in clean, we can reduce our carbon footprint. We are B Corp certified. And so we hold our standards environmentally. We hold them to a much higher standard in everything that we do.
And you mentioned it briefly, but what happens to unwearable clothing or clothing that is damaged and no longer good?
So we'll take that, we'll separate that out. Each family will get one credit per garment for each of those. And we've partnered with a nonprofit that grinds them up and uses them for insulation. So it is still part of that closed loop system. It's not ending up in a landfill or being incinerated. We are very transparent about what we do with everything.
It's really so thoughtful. Now, I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about the bootstrapping nature that you started this with. So most founders start with the idea and they raise money and then kind of build to protect. You spent years collecting donations to build your initial inventory. Why did you start that way? And also share a bit more about what the bootstrapping days looked like.
in order to build something, especially with what I'm doing, you need to offer product and have it there. And I still find gaps in certain places and we try to fill those gaps. As we built the platform, it kind of overlapped finding inventory on the Buy Nothing groups on Facebook, on Facebook Marketplace, places where like people were giving things away. Oftentimes people who have older children, but they are holding on to all of this stuff will be like, I have this. I know it's going to end up in a good place. Can I give this to you? So I did that intentionally so I could have things to start out with as we built the platform.
Can you also share more about the financing element and how in the early days you didn't directly go out to raise funds initially, but you were able to build it on your own?
Yeah. I mean, to be honest with you, I really didn't know that that was an option. I always thought you needed to have product in hand in order to raise capital. You know, as obviously I found out in my journey that you can do that. I had no idea. And I think that I would have felt a little more pressured to build quicker if I did that, where I was able to build more intentionally. So it wasn't a heavy lift financially in the beginning because I was getting all these donations. I mean, even still, if you think about it. And then as the platform started to be ready and I'm realizing that I need somebody to help with marketing, I need people to help with social media, I need people to help in places that I don't have the knowledge and the skill set to do that, bringing them in, and that costs money. And that's when my fundraising journey began.
Building off of that, you built an amazing group of advisors who have been with you from the early days. So in addition to capital, there's a real importance in terms of having the right people around you to help you build this company. Can you share more about how you did that and the roles that these individuals have played for you in building this?
Yeah, absolutely. My first advisor that I brought on is Vadisel Joyaboud. Vadisel is the former CFO, CEO of Lively, Ceremonia, and she's currently the CEO of Gorgie. I was part of the Dream Ventures Accelerator. Annie Evans and Kelly Arena. Annie is actually one of my super connector advisors, but she is the connector of all connectors. And I had financial questions and she introduced me to Vadisel. And Vadisel and I just had great rapport, got along, and she really believed in what I'm doing. So she has been instrumental. From there, I then met with a woman, Alexis Contos, who is the former CMO of NEA, SoftBank, Weebly, Braintree, Square. She's amazing, building her own breadwinners platform right now. She angel invests, but it kind of became more of like, I want you in my team. And Alexis and I get along beautifully. And she has been so incredible guiding me with like the right people, what I should be doing, how I should be thinking about things marketing wise. My next person that Alexis introduced me to is my fractional CTO slash advisor. His name is Madhur Joshi. He is the current COO of withjoy.com. And he is one of the founding team members of Microsoft Azure. And he's just been incredible because tech is something I have no idea what I'm doing. And then I thought outside the box, what can I do to get us in the rooms without having to knock, to talk to moms, because word of mouth in the mom community is huge. I brought on two super connector advisors. I brought on Amanda Mintz and I brought on Annie Evans. And so I'm in the room and people are like talking and whatever, like the things that they say hold really great value. So they've been incredible. And next on the horizon, we are talking to a parenting mentor to bring on. So stay tuned.
I appreciate how thoughtful you've been in terms of surrounding yourself with different advisors for different reasons and filling the boxes that you didn't necessarily have checked yourself. And you mentioned so many names that I'm familiar with and similarly know the impact that they've had on so many phenomenal startups and founders and companies. So it's great. Great to be in good company.
Super lucky. I mean, I remember what Madhur said to me when we first were connected. He said, congratulations on building a company that's both smart and ethical. And that it stays with me because it meant a lot.
Yeah. So ultimately you did decide to go down a fundraising path and you mentioned it a little bit, but can you share more about what that experience was like for you? And also any advice that you have for founders that are in the same bucket?
Yeah, I raised the friends and family angel round and it came pretty easily for me because people believe in it so wholeheartedly. I'm currently raising my pre-seed round, which is a little more difficult. I'm talking to VCs and it's always hard because you have the chicken or the egg situation. You're like, well, we want to see more traction. We invest in early stage, but you're still too early. So I just opened up my pre-seed round. We are looking for investors currently, but I really want to align myself with the right people.
You will, because you're intentional. Knowing that much of this company was born out of your own experience as a parent, you know, for your kids who are watching you build this, what do you want them to learn from seeing you do this?
Perseverance. Perseverance and building something that can do better for the world. Building from a place of empathy towards other people. And that's it. Go after your dreams. Go do what you believe in. I mean, you hear about people not starting a business because, you know, you have an idea, but they never really execute. And it's amazing. And my, you know, my kids love it. They know, you know, when something doesn't fit anymore, it either goes to my son or it gets put in pre-love you. They just know.
It's great that that's become just a natural model, and probably for so many other families, the idea that things used to immediately be donated or thrown out, this is kind of an adjustment to their typical habits. And so there's both a challenge in the fact of changing habits, but there's also a real opportunity in habit changing. So when you think about Pre-Love You in 5 years, where do you see this?
Wow. I mean, we are set up nationally at the moment. In 5 years, it's a model that I hope that goes global. I also love to expand into teens. And then eventually maternity. I think that we have everything we need as far as like adults and women's clothing. I want to keep it intentional in the spaces that need the support, but really scaling and becoming a norm, right? A norm for the way families think about shopping going forward.
I love that you're continuing to find the white spaces where, for the most part, they're underlooked areas, and yet there's such tremendous opportunity. That is the real sign of a true entrepreneur. So, Rebecca, I want to end with some rapid fire questions. So quick, okay. Instinctive answers. What is the best advice you've ever received?
Be warmth in a room of people. Be serious, but always bring warmth into a room.
I think you do that. What is the first thing you do every morning?
Generally, cuddle with my kids. I'm not one that wants to let go of them. And so I'm going to milk it for every moment until it's over.
That's so special. What for you does living a rich life mean?
Time. Mm-hmm. You know, they say the days are long and the years are short. Time is a rich life. Having time with my kids and my family. And appreciating it.
It's beautiful. What do you wish you knew before starting your own company?
Everything. Everything. I wish I knew how to really start what was needed. I mean, I'll be honest, I turned my website on. I did MVP in May of 2024. And I was like, where are all the customers? Why aren't they signing up? I wish I had a degree in marketing or a career in marketing, because I think that that's crucial. And that's one place that I'm always trying to learn more.
And for you, what are you dreaming about next?
I'm dreaming that this model catches on. We're giving you back the time that you don't have with your families. That's what I wish.
That's beautiful. Rebecca, thank you so much for this conversation. You know, I know that we could talk for so much longer about a number of ideas, but for those who are looking to continue to follow your journey and Pre-Love You, where can they find you?
You can find me on LinkedIn. You can go to preloveyou.com to the website, and then on Instagram, Pre-Love You Kids.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for joining me.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Alexis. This was really nice. I enjoyed the conversation.
I hope you enjoyed Rebecca's story as much as I did. As someone who has followed so many resale companies, I love the contrarian take on the business model and the child-first focus for what she's built. And the way she's done it makes it all the more impressive. She spent years collecting donations, launched a credit-based platform where kids learn that clothes have value,
surrounded herself with phenomenal advisors, and she did it based on the conviction that she could use her 30 years of fashion industry experience to build a solution. And she's teaching the next generation, her own kids, the kids who use her platform, and the students she speaks to in schools, that clothes aren't disposable, that everything has value, and that we get to choose what we contribute to. You can find Preloved You at preloveyou.com, and you can send in clothes, get credits, and shop sustainably. This has been Dreaming Big. I'm Alexis Allen, and I look forward to seeing you next time.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.